Romans chapter 3 in your Bibles. If you have been visiting with us, well, if you haven't been visiting with us, you don't know where we're going. So let me tell you where we're going. We're in the book of Romans. But if you have been with us regularly, you know that finally this is the last installment of all the bad news that we're going to hear in Romans. And starting next week, we're finally going to get some good news. But one last time, the bad news before we get to the good news. So Romans chapter 3, verse 9, 20 this morning. Romans chapter 3, verses 9 through 20. Here's what I want to do, all right? My wife, from time to time, is correct. Okay, let me rephrase that. My wife is always right. And she has told me over the years that, you know, when you get up to preach, Jason, you simply should just do away with the introduction. Just simply read the text, tell us where we were last week, and dive into the text this week. She's right. In this particular text, what I want to do is read it, not give you any little cheesy Jason introduction. We're just going to dive right into where we've been so that we see the power of the text. So, Romans 3, 9. What then? Are we Jews any better? No, not at all. For we have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. Are under sin. As it is written, none is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside, together they have become worthless. All have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. Their throat is an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their paths are ruin and misery. In the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before our eyes. Now, we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may shut up, be stopped, and the whole world be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, no human being, no flesh will be justified in God's sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. All right, here we have been for the last 5 weeks. Starting out in the book of Romans, in chapter 1, Paul spends the first 17 verses with good news. He begins by saying, "Hello, Romans, it's me, Paul. And I am an ambassador in chains. I am here to preach the gospel, and the gospel is the good news about Jesus Christ." But to fully understand the good news, we have to understand the bad news. So starting in chapter 1 and verse 18, for 6 long studies now, Paul has laid out the bad news. He began in verse 18 of chapter 1 to tell us that the wrath of God is being poured out today. It is being revealed upon who? Upon those who suppress the truth. What kind of truth? The truth about God. And as such, we do not honor or give thanks. But instead, we have become futile in our thinking, our hearts have become darkened. We have become fools, he says in verse 22, and we exchange the glory of God, who God is for the glory of man. And we also dishonor our bodies. And such we serve the creature rather than the Creator. Literally, we worship ourselves over the one who created us. As such, we then give ourselves over to unnatural relations. We have a debased mind. At the end of chapter 1, he said, we are filled with and full of over 20 different actions and attitude that reflect our rebellion against God. And then as he began chapter 2, which was kind of the climax of chapter 1, he said, here's the reality. Everybody who does this deserve God's judgment. And just in case you miss out, the rest of chapter 2 into chapter 3 is to tell the Jews they're in the same boat. So whether you're Gentiles who are really before God, if you're okay Jews who are doing the best you can, the reality is all of us are in rebellion against God, and as such, we deserve death and judgment. Now, here's the fun question. This is like Christianity 1. All that I just described can be summed up in one word. The Bible calls it, it begins with an S, it ends with an N, the middle letter is an I. It is what? Sin. The Bible calls this sin. It's sin. Here in chapter 3 and verse 9 is the first time Paul calls it sin. Isn't that amazing? As a matter of fact, it says in verse 9, I've been telling you the whole time, I've been charging that the whole time, all of this means we're all under sin. Sin is not a popular term today. We make mistakes, an occasional mental lapse here and there. But what Paul has been describing and what he'll go into in great depth this morning is to describe for us the reality that we are sinners, or to do what Paul does, he says we are under sin. I want you to recognize that if there is a theme thought in the whole section today, it is that little phrase, that we are under sin. So let's begin in verse 9. What then? Are we Jews any better off? Remember, he's been talking to two groups there. The Gentiles, that everybody knew were sinners, but there were Jews who believed they weren't that bad, that they had a special status with God, and the God at the end of the day would be like, you're okay, you're my people. And so he asks the question once again, is it true that Jews are better off with God than those pagan Gentiles? And his answer is no, not at all, for we have already charged that all, both Jews and Greeks, are what? Hupo hamatia. Uh-oh, what did he just do there? It's the Greek. And it's significant that he uses the word hupo, because the term refers to being under the authority or power of. For example, it's used in the Gospels of a commander who comes to Jesus and he says, I have soldiers under me. I'm the authority over them. I am the power over them. What Paul is beginning to say here is our relationship with sin is that we are under it. So I want you to picture a gigantic weight hovering over your head. And with each sin that we commit, this weight becomes more and more upon us so it begins to bear us down. That's the idea. Sin is not freeing for humans. Instead, it's a weight that we bear. And to properly define what it means to be under sin, this is kind of cool. Hamartia, the word for sin, literally means to miss the mark. The word is used in the Old Testament, in the Septuagint really, In Judges chapter 20 and verse 16, where it refers to several hundred left-handed men who could throw a stone and not miss the target or the mark. So when you think about it, what a great word to describe humanity. So our standard is what? Perfection before God, right? If we're going to be in heaven on our own terms, we have to be perfect. The standard is God. Now, reality is, every time we shoot, what happens? We miss. We fall short. The target of perfection is what God demands, and when we miss it, it's called sin. So here's the crazy idea. To be under sin means I'm under the weight of constantly missing the mark before God. Now, if you think about all that we did the previous 5 weeks, does that not just sum it up perfectly? In my mind, as my mind becomes debased, I miss the standard. As I begin to fulfill sexual desires that miss the standard, I fall short. All the sins described are man's attempt to reach a standard that he never, ever will reach. And just to add, the little term hamartia, to other places in Romans, it refers to incurring a debt. So think of sin as missing the mark, but then incurring a debt. Remember I talked about this chest that every single time drop a coin in with the letter S on it, it's just another mark, another coin that says you're more and more in debt to God's wrath. And then in chapter 6, he talks about the fact that we're enslaved to sin. We miss the mark, we're in debt to sin, and most of all, what does it do? It enchains us. We do not find ourselves to be our masters. Sin is our master, and we are in bondage to it. And by the way, all of this is what theologians describe as total depravity. That what Paul has been describing, and we'll see in a moment what he starts launching into in verse 10, is a description of this. That if you were to peel the spiritual skin off of me before Christ, if you were to peel it away and go layer by layer of Jason, would you find any true goodness in Jason? You know what you would find? After layer after layer after layer, we'd be like, this is disgusting, this is dark, this is gross, this is sinful. Every part of Jason, spiritually speaking, is sinful. Total depravity says it permeates everything we do, even if we don't do everything. Because that's like the secret to getting to heaven, isn't it? I'm not like Hitler. I mean, he did everything. Everything that God says don't do, Hitler did it. He deserves hell. Jason, I know there's a good spot somewhere down in there. I don't do everything that I shouldn't do. Yes, but everything you do is permeated by what? Sin. Darkness. How you feeling so far this morning? You doing good? All right. It only gets worse. Here we go. So just to let you know, the good news is we're all under sin. What does that mean? I'm so glad you asked, because verses 10 through 18, Paul is going to get a litany of Old Testament verses that prove what he just said. Remember he said, I made this claim that everybody's sinners. Now let me prove it. Well, how are you going to prove it, Paul? I always say, just look around you, but that's true. But where does Paul believe all this truth about humanity? By mere observation? By looking and listening to the philosophers of his day? Where does Paul prove that we're sinners? This is so key. Sin is God's perspective on us. Sin is not our perspective of ourselves. What do I mean by that? Verse 10, he says, as it is written. And we just kind of move on from there. Don't move on for a second. Written where? Oh, the Old Testament. Yes. So who wrote the Old Testament? Men. Good, good. Now, next step. Who else wrote the Old Testament? God. Oh, so you're telling me that the Bible, the Old Testament, New Testament, it is God's perspective on himself and us. Yes. So what Paul is saying here, in particular to the Jews, this is what God thinks of us. Let me prove to you that what I just said is God's perspective. And so, he'll go to Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 20. He'll quote from Psalm 5. He'll quote from Psalm 14. He'll quote from Psalm 53. He'll quote from Psalm 140. At the end, he'll quote from Isaiah 59, verses 7 through 8. In other words, as Paul begins to just, okay, so how do I prove to these people who are listening that they're sinners? I got it. Growing up as a good Jewish boy, I know my Psalms, and there's some doozies in there. And I know Isaiah, and boy, Isaiah really blasts us sinners. In Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, there's none who is righteous. I'll use that. So, understand that being called a sinner is God's perspective. And having said that, here's what Paul begins to do. He lays out what sin is like. Number one, sin is universal. If you were listening as I read, did you not hear all the no one, no one, all, all? If you didn't, let me remind you. Ready? Verse 10. None is righteous. Let me ask you, how many are in none? Well, no. Let me ask it again. How many are in none? Zero, thank you. No, not, and just in case you missed it, no, not one. No one understands. By the way, what does it mean to be righteous? It means to have a right standing with God, to be perfect, if you will. What's he saying? By the way, this is from Psalm 14. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. And then he launches in. No one is righteous. No one understands. There's no one who seeks. You should translate it as, there's no one who keeps on seeking after God. Because aren't there, in the church we call people seekers. There are those outside who are seeking for God. Well, I understand what you mean by that. There are people who are curious about this whole Christianity thing. That's a good thing. But when it really comes down to spiritually speaking, is there someone who truly, in a right, good way, seeks after knowing the true and living God according to his terms and not mine? Nope. Well, okay, Paul, what do you think now? Well, keep reading verse 12. All have turned aside. Turned aside from what? God's way. Together they have become... I'm offended. When I read that I was offended. I'm worthless? Did that not kind of make you go, really, Paul? Do you know what this word worthless means? It's basically the word sour. It's used of milk that became sour. What do you do with sour milk? You throw it out because you don't want to drink it. The idea is this. We are the image of God. So in that sense, we have worth. He loved us so much. But as far as spiritually speaking before God, do we bring anything to the table? No. In that sense, spiritually speaking, we're sour milk. How's your ego so far? Is it great? Okay, it gets better. No one does good, not even one. Now, even that little verse, some people struggle with because let's ask a fair question. Are there good things done in this world? Yeah, I'm glad that we pay taxes for roads, and I'm glad that people do good things. And that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about good as just societal good. What are we talking about? We are talking about, remember, the standard perfection. Does anybody do anything that in that goodness is able to raise them up to God's standard perfectly all the time? The answer is no. Do we do good things? Yes. Am I a good person from my heart before God? No. No one, all. So just in case you were wondering, that's everybody else, but it's not me. One more time. All means all, and no one means you're in there. I'm in there. This was so much fun to study this week. I was so encouraged. So sin is universal. That's what Paul's trying to point out. Secondly, it's deadly. Notice what he begins to say in verse 13 through 17. Their throat is an open grave. Now, he is taking this from the Psalms. And the Psalms are always poetic. In poetry, you're able to make beautiful illustrations, right? So poetry is meant to be imaginary. It's just, okay, my mind goes there. So think about it. He wants you to picture your throat. Don't do this, I'll do it for you. But, you know, your throat, and just picture this gigantic open grave as you open your mouth. Now, what goes into the grave? What comes out of a grave? Yeah, Dad. So, your words produce death. They use tongues to what? Do you remember chapter 1? We were meant to give thanks to God. That's what our hearts and minds and our tongues are for. What do we do here with our tongues? To deceive. Keep reading. It only gets better. The venom of snakes. Poisonous snakes is under their lips. Oh, love this. I love this. Picture yourself again. When you open your mouth, what comes spraying out? Love and kindness and goodness. What comes out of sinner's mouth is what? Lies, deceit, to do what? To kill. The mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet, he goes from our mouth now to our feet. In other words, where we go, their feet are swift to shed blood. What do sinners do? In life, we are constantly killing each other, both metaphorically and literally. In their paths are ruin and misery. In other words, the journey that we are on in life as unbelievers, as sinners, there's nothing but ruin and misery, which if you think about it, when you look at the world around you, we put on this gigantic smile. Well, good, aren't we? But then when you run to a counselor and get plenty of drugs because I don't feel that way, because I feel the way I just don't. The world lives in constant misery. Happy. You ever notice that? Why do Hollywood stars look great on the outside? When you hear about their lives, you go, yeah, they're. And as such, they have not known. Why is there wars? Why is there constant friction? Why do we have two parties of politics in our country? Why does Britain have way too many? Why is it that mankind can never sit down and be at peace with each other? Here's why. Because as a sinner, it's all about me. Do you see why sin is deadly? We kill with our words. We kill with our feet and hands. Every single waking moment for a sinner is one of constant death. Can I just pause and just say this brief reminder? As believers, we have what? The message of life. Let that sink in. And thirdly, it's universal. It's death. And verse 18, he kind of seems to sum it all up. There is no fear of God before their eyes. I would call this damning. Sin is damning. Well, why do I say that? Well, if you're a Jew, you know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Or to put it this way, all right? Proverbs speaks of just humanity, and in front of them is a door. And the door says, the wisdom of God, i.e. a relationship with the living God. To enter through that door, you have to begin with what? Fearing the God who stands behind that door. If there is no desire to be in relationship with that God, I mean, that's what he means by there's no fear of God. There's no desire to know this God. If there's no desire to know this God, what do you have left as human beings? Nothing. As a matter of fact, we learned back in chapter 1 that we choke out this truth about God. We deny this truth about God, and we exchange this truth of God for what? The lie. When you take God out of the picture of humanity, you're left with a dark void that we fill with ourselves and sin. Now, why do I call this damning? Let me just pause and say, I found this interesting. If you were to describe hell, how would you do it? It's dark, there's fire. Yes, that's all true. That's the imagery used of hell. But the most horrible thing about hell is the lack of God's presence. The one who created you will not be present with you for eternity in hell. There is no fear of God. That means there's no relationship with God before sinners. We, as sinners, live in a present hell, only to find ourselves there for all eternity without Christ. That is what it means to be a sinner. We all sin. We're dead because of it. And ultimately, we are damning ourselves to an eternal hell if we stay in that boat. Now, if you were listening, you know that you also heard another phrase, under. Did you? We're under sin in verse 9. Now, look at verse 19. Now, we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are, oh, there it is, under something. Now, here's what's interesting, though. It's not the word hupo. It's the word in, not I-N. It's actually E-N, if you're going to transliterate it. The idea is not so much that we're under the weight of the law. Writers did it to kind of explain it, but really it should be that we are enclosed by the law. The law surrounds us. So let me put it this way. Now we know that whatever the law says, and the law was what? What we just said. The Old Testament is the law. It speaks to those who are enclosed by the law. What do I mean by that? Well, picture sin as a weight that I'm bearing and will crush me. But the law, I want you to picture this way. I want you to picture gigantic walls too high to scale that enclose you. And on these walls are inscribed over 600 laws. And you look around, you're like, well, this is wonderful. You shall love the Lord your God, and thou shalt not. And this is beautiful, isn't it? So I know what, if I can just keep each of these, I'll scale over the law and be saved, right? Right? Do you know where it's going here? Can I scale the law as it encloses me in such a way to keep it perfectly that I'll be saved? Now we know that whatever the law says, this truth about us sinners speaks to those who are enclosed by the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world be accountable to God. Here's the thing. Remember I said last week that there were Jews who believed that they were God's people. And the law was given to God's people simply to obey. And if I obeyed, things were good, right? Wrong. What does the law do? It tells me, like it just did, I'm a sinner. So here's the picture. You ready for this? It's like standing before the courtroom of God, and there's God all decked out in his judgment robe. And I come up to him like, hey, what's up? That whole law thing, I did pretty good. 353 out of 600 some. I think it was like 51% God. And you know what Paul says God does in that moment? He looks at you and says, 51 doesn't count. So here's what I'm going to tell you to do, Mr. Sinner. I've said this before, we can't in the house, but I can say it while I preach. Shut up. Because God will look at that person and say, so glad you did the 51, but you had to do the other 49 as well, and you didn't. So let me tell you something, shut up. As a matter of fact, not only do you shut up, but to be held accountable literally means you are now judged. You are to be carted off to be imprisoned. That's what Paul is saying. The law doesn't do any good. What does the law do? It tells me to shut up because I'm a sinner, and then it hauls me off. That's why he said, reading verse 20, thus, by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight. What does Paul mean by works of the law? This is a key phrase because it's only used in Galatians. So you would think it's important. We need to understand what he meant by the work of the law. It's really not hard. Works means doing something. That wasn't hard, was it? No, it wasn't. Law means what? Well, the Old Testament. Not just the Pentateuch, it's the whole law is speaking to the law was God's will for us. Okay, so if I do God's will the best I can, what's going to happen? God will applaud and say, good, well done. So here's what he's saying. That's it. If I do the works of the law because I'm circumcised and because I'm a Jew, I'll be okay. So if you believe that actions done to secure God's favor by doing the best that you can, you're okay. Guess what? By the works of the law, no human being, literally flesh, will be justified in his sight. Remember that question? There's God all down in his robe. And I come to him, I'm like, hey, check out what I did. And to be right, right standing with God, he demands perfection. God will say, no one can be perfect in my sight by simply doing the best that you can do. It never will work. Listen to Galatians chapter 2. We ourselves are Jews by birth and not Gentile sinners. That's the same idea that we have in Romans. Those Gentiles, blah, sinners. Us Jews, we're not too bad off. Yet we know that a person is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus. So we have also believed in Jesus, because that's the only hope. In order to be justified by faith in Christ and not by works of the law, because by works of the law, no one will be justified. Well, why, Paul? Galatians 3:10. Here he nails it. For all who rely on the works of the law, for all who say, I can do as many good things as I can and I'm fine, Paul says they're under a curse. Well, why are they under a curse? Because the law itself says, listen to this, cursed be everyone who does not abide by how many things? Don't miss that all. Cursed is the person who believes that the law will save them if they don't do all of the law written in the book of the law, and thus to do them. Here is what Paul is saying. The law cannot put us in a right relationship with God. Instead, do you notice what happens at the end of verse 20? Since through the law comes knowledge of sin. The purpose of the law was not to save us, it was what? To show us God's will and how we never, ever reach there. As a matter of fact, here's what the law does. It does not save us, it only condemns us. Fascinating, isn't it? When someone's driving and there's no laws, we're good. Wouldn't that be awesome? No, it really wouldn't. Not the way people drive nowadays. But if all of a sudden we put up a stop sign, and we put up lines, and we put up lights, and we do all these things that now as a driver, all of a sudden we recognize there's no longer freedom. We're now what? Constant breaker of driving. So all these wonderful laws that were meant to protect us, they really do condemn us. And for some of us, way more than others. So when we get done with verse 20, I just have one question. Don't you? Is there any hope for the people we just described? Or to put it more personally, is there any hope for Jason, whom Paul just described? Is there any good news in the midst of this horrible news? Yes. Come back next week. But just verse 21. Righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law, even though it's of God through faith in Jesus Christ to all those who believe. And that is where we'll pick it up next week.